Miss 5678 Dances Report Podcast. I'ma keep it hot, never hit it on fire. I'ma grab a filly, go and load it at the bar. What you talk, what you say, huh? Got a flow, got a move slow, huh? Better you running out the dough, huh? It's gonna be a long, long flow. What up, what up, what up, y'all? This is Miss 5678, and you're tuning into the Dances Report, and I'm with the amazing Kunlay. He's one of my brothers. He's one of my Dance Central fam. Everybody who knows him in the dance world, you know he's a beast, a humble one, and he's now a dad and, like, just so many amazing layers that, you know, we want to get to know, and I already, you know, I haven't gotten a chance to catch up with them. So he's in the medical field, all that stuff. So just a Harvard alumni, like just so many dynamics of him. That's incredible. And I can't wait for you guys to hear from Kunlay. What's up, Kunlay?
Hey, what's up, Chanel? I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, man.
Can't wait to catch up in general, and then also just let you know what's new in my life.
Yes. So, and he's a dad, he's a husband, you guys. He got married. So, congrats to that. Congrats to the missus.
Thank you.
So, before we get started, what I've been doing is doing a daily mood check-in. And when I do a daily mood check-in, it's primarily for your mental awareness of, like, where you are in your mood, and not to hold anything in and to be expressive. So many of us don't really catch up with each other. We don't really check in with each other other than a text or, like, a social media sort of, like, encounter. But we're not really, checking in our day-to-day. So, and it's also Mental Health Awareness Week. So that's a good thing to, sort of tap in. So what the daily mood check-in looks like, and I'll kick it off so you can kind of get the idea, is one thing that made you happy today and one thing that made you mad, sad, bothered, or indifferent. So for me, one thing that made me excited and happy today is that I get to talk to you, and also because I get to prepare for another trip to access the podcast and, get prepared to see, festivals and concerts that are coming up. So it kind of, like, gets me sort of strapped into what I have in terms of the podcast, the content coming up, and just prepare. I guess I'm excited to prepare, if you will. I don't think anything made me mad or sad or bothered or indifferent today. Pretty much, led with what I would say joy and excitement. I'm always excited to have one more day to get it right. And, so I'm grateful. Awesome. Gratitude. What was one thing that made you happy today?
One thing that made me happy, I had to just waking up to, like, the perfect sunny spring day.
I know, it's right? Like, that's some nice, like, weather.
The high of 75, like, that's I'm all about that. With the cruising of the 80s, not so much. But at 70s, so I spent like an hour today just outside, took the dog to the park.
Wow.
Realized I don't make as much time to be outside as I used to. So the weather encouraged me today.
That's awesome. I mean, and weather does change people's moods too. I'll say that. Was there anything that made you mad, sad, bothered, or indifferent?
Oh, this might just be a theme of parenthood, but the lack of sleep.
Oh, no.
baby is teething right now, so I'm not mad at him, but I am. It throws my day off a little bit if I'm only getting a couple hours of sleep and then getting up and consoling him and then trying to squeeze in another hour or two of sleep here and there. So it takes some adjusting, but it comes with the blessings of parenthood as well. So I can't really complain.
I remember those days of teething. Oh, my goodness. And the baby's irritability. They were irritable. And you got to find ways to soothe them and all that. I remember those. I miss those days. So who is Kunlay, and how did you become Kunlay?
Oh, man. How did I become Kunlay? I guess it starts with my parents. They were never dancers themselves and never really encouraged me to dance. Even when I told them I danced, they didn't believe me.
They don't believe that you dance?
After the first couple of years of me dancing, they didn't believe because I guess growing up, I always pushed education on us and the value of that because it saved my dad's life. Mm-hmm. And so I think the values they instill with me, I bring it to dance. So resilience and working hard and, you know, never thinking that anything's impossible for you to attain. And always, my dad's motto is like, if you're going to do something, you have to be the best at it.
That's true. Because
he had sacrificed all of this so that he could come to the States and provide for his family. And he didn't want his sacrifice to go to waste. So it was always a level of excellence that was expected from us growing up. And so they pushed us hard to education. I was supposed to be the doctor of the family.
Hey.
And so they pushed me really, really hard in that sense. And yeah, ended up going to Harvard for undergrad. Was interested in the sciences and health. But that's actually where I found dance is when I was an undergrad at Harvard my freshman year. Went to a freshman activities fair and there was a dance company. And I never danced before. Had run track and other sports in high school. And it was just the opportunity to do something I'd never done. And it looked like these people were having fun and they knew something I didn't. So I signed up to join the dance company and then ended up going to a dance event at MIT, which is a breaking and popping battle. And that's where I saw the culture of the dance. And that's what I really fell in love with. And that's what has really defined me from that point, from that moment of seeing my mentors, Shao and Megatron, getting down in a circle.
Yeah, shout out to Shao and Megatron.
Yeah, I was hooked, and that's become a part of my identity. Because when I saw them, I wasn't thinking, "Oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll do that." In my heart, I said, "I'm supposed to be doing that."
Yeah.
I don't know where this was all my life, but that is part of who I am. I just didn't know it until I saw it in that moment. So I think it's been that's who I am as a person. It's been this balance of like professionalism and valuing the education and what that can do, but also equally finding the balance of the creativity and expression and community that I found through dance. And I've always kind of teetered on both sides of it and having both sides a really major part of my life.
That's amazing. Like, that is absolutely amazing. Like, so, I mean, just even hearing that you went to Harvard is like inspiring. You know, I remembered that you went to Harvard, but I didn't remember like the story on how you had to dance, like how you became a dancer. What's your cultural and your also your dance background and bio? So people understand right. Where you came from and also where you came from in dance.
Right, right. I guess the culture of my house was very, very West African. So my parents are both Nigerian.
Hey.
And so the ethics and the morals and the values all come from that culture. So they didn't dance around the house or anything, but they always had music on. I think it's part of culture, and part of their culture was that music was a form of, you know, celebration or mourning. Like, there was always music involved, you know. And though they didn't dance in the house, I know that when they went back and visited family in Nigeria, that they did dance as part of just ceremony. So whether it was a wedding or festival or whatever, there was dancing involved. So they never considered themselves dancers. And it's really interesting that I see that now as dancing more of a tool of communication rather than this thing that's separate from who you are. So that's really that kind of my family culture. When I got into the dance scene, the style that I saw, my mentor's room was popping, and that was what really drew me into the street dance culture was the style of popping. And it was the magic of it, because the style itself is not necessarily based off of physical ability per se. Like, you know, you're not doing flips and you know, spins and all of these kind of things, but it's based off of like an illusion that you create by really honing in on understanding every part of your body. You know, the way your muscles contract, the way your joints move and isolate. So I was, my mindset, aside from the culture, my mindset had always been like breaking things down and like putting them back together. And so when I was to dissect the style of popping, I gained a further appreciation for what I was seeing the more and more I dug into it. So maybe that value of studying and educating on my parents' side that influenced me really made me a student of dance and not just a practitioner of it. And I really wanted to understand the elements that made things up.
Right. And then like, and that's the good thing about like sort of when you sort of grasp the idea of movement and also coming into your own and realizing how you move, you know what I mean? That's the cool, that's the cool part. A lot of people don't figure that out. They kind of just learn from someone else on what their style is and what their move, you know, what they teach and so forth. But it's, right. They never really master how they move and what their style is. So,
Right. You know. Yeah. It was unique actually. Cause and not many people know this cause I don't do it as much now, but I started doing choreography at the same time that I started really diving into street dance. So I was a part of both choreography heavy companies, but then also part of, you know, street dance crews. And so it was interesting. I saw that in choreography, it's really easy to get lost in someone else's style because you're copying what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And if you're not thinking of the movement as inspiration for your own movement, it's easy for you not to know how to freestyle, even though you have all this vocabulary in your head.
Right.
But because I was learning street dance at the same time, I was taking the pictures and the movement I was learning in choreography and seeing, oh, can I adapt this to my freestyle? Mm-hmm. Some inspiration from this movement, can I adapt it to that?
And that's a cool thing about, not even from there, like, a lot of people don't even, like, they don't know how to, they have to actually do it in steps. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people have a hard time with, okay, I got to do this at this time and let me try to do this at this time. They have to do it in steps. A lot of people can't, multitask when it comes to learning, dance and so forth. So, kudos to you for that. You know what I mean? Cause that's a hard task.
It is. I was so enamored with this art form. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I was just trying to catch up on lost time. I was like, man, I'm supposed to be dancing my whole life. I didn't realize until I was 18, 19.
Yeah, but you know what?
So it was...
There's no time stamp. There's no time on discovery. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Seriously. That's true. What was one of your biggest influence?
Oh, man. When it came to dance,
yeah.
My biggest influence, man...
I'm hitting you guys over the head with these questions.
I know.
Okay.
It's interesting. I think the go-to is thinking about like the pioneers in the art form. You know, like your Papa Pete and Pugu Sam and those guys who really pushed the art form forward and really kept it alive long enough for me to find the style. But for me, the inspiration was actually session that Megatron and Shallow started in Boston called The Slaughterhouse.
Shout out to Slaughterhouse. Do they still do it?
Yes. They don't, unfortunately. I'd love to bring it back. But a lot of the people of that era are not in Boston anymore. So we're all kind of spread out. But to bring it back, even if it's like a Slaughterhouse reunion, would be a dream of mine. The reason it inspired me so much is that it was a practice every Saturday. When it first started, we'd practice for like 8 hours. And the way the practices were, it was set up in a battle format. So you didn't just come in and like cipher. You came in and you either battle 1-on-1 or 4-on-4, 2-on-2 or King of the Hill or 7 of Smoke. But the thing was you had to come ready each week. And so because I knew each Saturday, people would call me out if I was doing the same things I'd done last week or I hadn't gotten any better. Because after every battle, a couple people give comments on who they think won and why. It made me practice Monday through Friday so I could be ready for Saturday. And there was like a drive that happened in terms of building with these other people who are learning the style, like Jedi Knights and Onion and Lady Beast, learning from with them and growing together with them. At that time, that's what our house was going on. There's nothing I've ever experienced like that. And that's why a lot of us at that time were then going from there and going, you know, going to New York, going to the Midwest and winning competitions, because we were, each week we were beating each other up.
Oh my God. Each other in like, you know, I can't imagine, because I know you guys would be going off. Y'all go off, man. What?
We had no choice.
I wonder, you know, do you stay in contact with Shao and Megatron and them?
Yes. I got to see Megatron. Long story with him, he's unfortunately is incarcerated, has a few years left.
Okay.
But he was actually he was temporarily at a facility here in New York. So I've been writing him, and we've been writing back and forth and staying in touch. And when he was here in New York, I actually got to see him in person a couple of times. It had been 7 years since I had seen him, and so just to see him and reconnect was amazing, and it just brought back all these memories of those old times in Boston. That was when I first started college, so we're talking 16, 17 years ago. But still has an impact on my life and my friendships today. And Shallow, I got to see, I judged a competition, Kings of New York, in February. So he came out, and it was good to see him as well. We always try and stay in touch. Social media makes it a lot easier to stay in touch with people.
That's good that you stay in contact with them and you're part of his support. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's your...
Yeah, it gotta be. It's my family.
Listen, it takes a village, and it is a village. Mm-hmm. You gotta find your village. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What's your specialty and technique? Like, what's your specialty in regards to technique? What's your specialty?
It's funny. I think I have a specialty. Then when people come to me, they're like, oh, I really like this, or I really like that, or like, you're really good at this. How can you teach me that? It's often something that I'm not aware of. So what I've been hearing a lot recently is patience. And I think with popping, it requires a lot of that, because people, and the things that I focus on are really building solid technique. So having really, really strong hit, you know, really clean waves, and really just clean movement in general. But yeah, that's all driven from patience, from taking the time to do these things that aren't fun to practice at all. It's not fun to practice hitting for 20 minutes. And not moving and hitting, just having your arms in one spot and just practicing the contraction and relax. After 2 minutes, you're bored.
Oh, my goodness.
to do it another 15 minutes after that, it just takes patience. And when people ask me, I think they want a shortcut to like, oh, how do you hit so hard? It's like, well, I've been hitting every day for 16 years. You know,
right.
That's how I hit hard. So my approach is that. My approach is really the patience with continuing to develop each style so that I can make sure I'm doing each one as cleanly as possible, I think is my approach.
That's amazing. And then for those who are listening to what, you know, different, because I mean, I ask this question frequent to all the choreographers and dancers that are on the podcast, so they get to a collective of, you know, what those specialties are and sort of kind of, if you're starting out or trying to figure out yourself, then you get, you know, a plethora of, you know, different choreographers' perspectives on what their specialties are. So I'm glad you guys, you know, you guys are able to answer that. What's your favorite part of the business? You know what I mean? Is it the because it is a business. We have to say that. I mean, we do it for love, but when it becomes, you know, you're getting hired to do certain aspects of it, what's the favorite part of the business that you like about it? Is it the creative process? Is it the teaching process? Is it the, you know, the shows or the competitions, the battles? Like, what part of the business do you like?
Oh, man. It's changed over the years.
Yeah,
I used to be heavy into the battles because I didn't have a name. And the only way to build it was to go out and battle people. Now it's competitions. I don't compete as much as I judge or teach, but I like the competition because that's the moment that I was introduced into the culture was at a competition. That wasn't at a performance or anything. That's the first time I saw a street dance was in a competition setting. And the reason I still enjoy it to this day is that that's where the people come together.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave their troubles at the door, and they either come to battle or come to cipher or come to just socialize. I realize that's when I catch up with people. You know, I'm not doing Sunday brunch with my dance friends. We're going out and sessioning, or we're going to an event, and that's where we catch up, and that's where we connect, either through movement or just through catching up. But that's, I think as I've gotten older, I've realized the value of the relationships I've made through dance and events that allow me to reconnect with those people are kind of my my favorite part of this thing. So I love being asked to judge events because that's just, again, a way for me to go and maybe travel to another part of the country where I haven't got to catch up with people. And so I'll try and, you know, outside of judging the event, just try and see as many people as I can.
And that's a good part is also traveling. But I mean, so many people say, I like the traveling. I get to go for do what I love for free in different countries.
Right.
I mean, I love touring and traveling too.
Right.
So
very
I
true.
Hear that.
Very true. My traveling, I don't love traveling as much. Maybe because I wouldn't bother or anything.
Yeah.
But I kudos to those people who like that's their thing, going out and teaching around the world.
I mean, I have to sort of, before when I was like, it was just me, it was easy to do that. But I also was also doing a different, different aspect of the entertainment. I was, you know, more of a singer. And then when I didn't have, when I wasn't singing and I was actually doing, backup dance for artists. So it was a little different back then. When I had Amia, I had to sort of be more responsible, you know, with the jobs that I took, because I can't just be like, yeah, I'm gonna be gone for like 6 months and then tell her dad, you know, weather the storm, brother, go ahead, dad. And he'll be like, what?
Right.
You know what I mean? He'll be like, there's some things that she needs from you that I can't give her. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I had to really be more responsible with the type of business that I chose in terms of the business anyway. So what's been some of your struggles in the industry and in the dance world? You know, because we struggle sometimes with money. We struggle with relationships. We struggle with the gig, the location of where we are, artists that we work for or companies that we work for, or just struggling between corporate and you know, the love of what you want to do and your dream. Sometimes what's been one of your struggles? Because I know I've had a different, over the years, it's been different phases. So one point I was like, cheating on dance and singing, my passion, my purpose, to be at a corporate job, because I really didn't have, at the bottom line, I didn't have the faith that I could step out and do this full time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, you know, me doing it more and treating it more like a business versus a hobby, and treating it more of a, you know, a frontline, you know, item for me. And then, if you know, still I'm still doing, you know, other things and just having to adjust to how many things I, you know, do. And then later on it becomes, you know, the only thing that I'm doing, and this is the breadwinner, this is the one that's making the money. And so having to figure out how that works and what that looks like from day to day or week to week or month to month, you know. So what's been some of your struggles in that area?
I think there's a couple of maybe recurring themes throughout this journey. And one is staying true to the culture and the history of the dance form, when maybe, again, the vision of the person hiring you is, you know, I get all the time in class, can you do the moonwalk? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, all right. You know, I know the person is paying me to teach them, but I also have a responsibility as an ambassador for the culture to educate them. And so it's a fine line. Sometimes you can be too aggressive in your approach, like, oh, this is wrong. All you've heard is wrong. Let me tell you the truth. And also walking that line of, okay, you don't know any better because that's what you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little more gentle. My approach is still that responsibility for me to educate you, or step away if it's not a good fit. That sometimes that's hard. And the other aspect is finding the lane of what you want to do within the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's easy to think that success is one thing, like, oh, if I get this tour, then that's it. So for me, it was reflecting and realizing I actually didn't want to teach full time. I didn't want to tour, and I didn't want to travel that much, and being okay letting those things go to find my balance so that, you know, the right opportunity will come around. So it is some of that patience, again, that allows me to be like, okay, that opportunity is not right, and that opportunity is not right. And saying no to things that sound really good, it's hard. So that's been a challenge. But I think that patience is paid off, because now I'm able to involve myself with community, but not, you know, not be on the teaching side, but be on, like, again, the bringing people together, the organizing side of dance. And that's where I feel like I fit in here.
And well, so, like, have you run into, like, you know, people that you battled and you beat before where they weren't so happy about it?
Yeah. So people, it's been long enough.
Right.
The time I've battled them, now it's like a running joke that, like, I'm going to get you, you know, or...
No, no.
You never really beat me that time. You know that, right?
Oh, Lord.
But
they still say that stuff? I hope not.
There's some people, no names mentioned, but, you know, it's been 6-7 years since I battled them. Like,
and they still got that hard soft spot? Right. They still got that, if that's even possible, they have a hard soft spot?
Yeah.
Dang.
But most of the time it's love. You might have intensity while you're battling, but afterwards, you know, you break bread and you go grab a bite to eat with people, and you realize, you know, these are my friends, regardless of who won or lost. And I try not to carry any animosity.
Yeah,
that'll
eat you up.
I see what it does to people, and I see what it does to your image when you go out to other places and you carry that negative energy with you.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to hang out with you. People don't want to, you know, they might appreciate your dancing, but outside of that, they don't want to be a part of who you are. So there hasn't been, you know, anyone that's really, really been after me for beating them.
Good. what's your favorite place to be? Is it the stage? Is it on a competition or battle stage, or is it, you know, in a studio or teaching? Like, what would you say as a dancer and a choreographer? What's your favorite place to be?
Oh, it's like kind of a surprise. My favorite place to be is my room.
I know that's right.
And
the comfort of your own house.
That's where I started, and not because of any reason, except that that's where I dance the most honestly. There's no noise of expectation of someone being impressed or needing validation from applause, or needing someone to understand my thinking. It's just me and the music,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And I think that's where the most honest movement comes out. I think it's where I connect to, you know, to my own spirituality, and find that connection is when I can eliminate the other distractions and just move.
I know. I also feel like there's no restrictions when you're in your own space.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
you're free to be. The only thing with some of us, I don't know about you, but I got to press the record button on a video or something, because I will not remember. I'm probably the most forgetfulest choreographer y'all know. Man, yo, how many takes? Like, do you remember when we used to do mocap and it would be like mad takes?
Oh, yes.
OMG. How was that experience for you? I mean, you're very different because, you know, we know you as, you know, a house. What would you consider, like, you people know you for the housing, popping, and what else?
Yeah. Oh, man, funny enough, I think people, when I first came in, popping was like my thing. Mm-hmm. Some people on campus, when I was doing more of the work with, there's an undergrad like choreography company, they knew me as more of a choreographer. But popping was a thing that built me a name.
Yeah.
In the dance community, and that's what, when people say like, "Oh, that's Catalyst," like, "Oh, he's popping." More and more, I think it's been like a muddling of my influences, because, you know, I take house classes, locking and just hip hop and just freestyle hip hop, and I try and find elements that blend with, you know, my first love of popping.
Yeah.
So now people see me popping, they'll see some other things in there.
Yeah.
Maybe not so clearly that they say like, "Oh, he's doing this and this," but mm-hmm. it's like, "Oh, there's something in there that's like not traditional popping."
Yeah. But I feel like everybody's blending their styles. Like, I get that all the time, especially with soca and dancehall. I don't do dancehall choreography in my classes, because what I found is my clientele, a lot of them that are coming don't even, they're not there yet. That's not their, mm-hmm. Their level is still at a beginner. So for me to, I tried it in the beginning, trying to give folks dance hall choreography, and it was tough because they wouldn't come back. Their confidence would be shot through the roof, and it like, okay, I give up. In other words, that's the type of vibe I would get, and I'd feel bad. And so now when I do teach dance hall and soca, I have to break down the two differences in the song, in the music. Like, it's two different types of styles. This is what this style looks like, and this is what this style looks like. You know what I mean? And, but what I find is you have music that's changing all the time. And so the music will have like a soca vibe, but then it'll have a dancehall vibe and an Afrobeat vibe. So they're mixing the whole entire thing together. And so what I find is I have a tendency of like using all of the movements and sort of explaining it when I teach it. The other thing I found too is that some folks in the Afrobeat world, they're producing Afrobeat, right? But they also have a house element to it. So there's a girl named, I forgot the girl's name, but she has a song called Runaway. The song is so dope. Matter of fact, I'm gonna get it for you just so you can not hear it, but like see what the song is. And she literally, let me see, what is her her name? She's an Afrobeat artist, and the song is, I mean, when you hear it, you definitely know that it's Afrobeat, but you want to start doing house moves to it. You find yourself skipping away and, you know, changing what you were originally doing and venturing off into some dancehall sort of like and house moves at the same time, because that's the rhythm of the music. So the girl's called Lundy London. And
okay.
So when we hear it in my class, I do, you know, some dance hall, and then I bust in some Afrobeat steps that people are familiar with. Even though that's not really my specialty in class, I still do it because I want people to understand where it all originated from, period. It's African movement, regardless, the way you look at it. And so some of the movement will translate and start to transfer into like some house steps. Some people don't, I mean, if you like really, really start dancing and you start breaking down movement, there's some people that actually do house that come take my class and will say, "This is simple, I mean, this is similar to and comparable to this house move." And we'll realize, "Oh, wow, you're right." You know what I mean? Even though we're not teaching, you know, this is house, we're not doing that in the class. We're just, so people can understand where their body's moving and how their body's moving and how to understand it. That's where we do that. You know what I mean? But
right.
It's very hard to sort of like, you know, explain where things come from when someone doesn't understand the culture at all. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's mean, it's not hard, but it's just, you know, explaining it through movement is harder than explaining it just in with words, verbal. Because you could tell people where things come from and how it originated and da-da-da-da-da. But when you have to show them, you know, this would look like this, and this is what it came from, and it's harder for them to understand the content. Because right then, they're still learning, they're trying to figure out how to get themselves acclimated with moving, period.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. When I teach, I think it's, I think labels have a point to them, and they have some value. Mm-hmm. I try to break away from the labels, because it does also create restriction. Like you're saying, sometimes in music, you know, music's not house. It brings that out of you. So it's, for me, I try to emphasize when I'm teaching what the feeling is. Cause even if you don't have any dance experience,
you
understand a feeling that you may have. And then when you find that feeling again, maybe in another style, mm-hmm. then it actually clicks for you. Like, oh, yes. This is like when I was in the popping class and I had this feeling of isolation. I had the same feeling here.
Yeah, see, what you're saying is exactly what I'm trying to explain, but I just don't have the right wording for it, because that's exactly what happens in my class all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? What do you have up and coming? Do you have any classes that people can take and, you know, and come see you and any battles that they can come support?
Man, if anyone's in New York, there's a bunch of stuff over the summer. I'm not teaching regular classes anymore. I've kind of stepped away from that and more into the administering and executive side in the dance community work. But I do teach workshops on occasion. I usually post that on Instagram or Facebook if people want to follow me there. And over the summer in New York, there is a bunch of stuff, intensive, like 36 Chambers of Style, which is hosted by Elite Force. If you don't know hip hop, that's where you want to go. Like two, three hour workshops back to back each day for a week. So it's a crash course in these, you know, from these pioneers. There's also Step Your Game Up is a big event in New York every summer. Ladies of Hip Hop, again, hosted by Michelle, is, I think it's his 15th year, highlighting female contributions to the hip hop movement and hip hop culture. And they have a culminating event as well. And so there's just a bunch of things back to back over the month of July in New York. So if you're not in New York, and if you can find a way to get there for July for a month, like, there's so much.
Oh, trust me, I'm sneaking myself up to New York. Yeah. And I ain't gonna say I'm sneaking. I'm just coming to New York, because this season for me is literally preparing, learning, growing this podcast, and really getting as much resources attached to the podcast as possible. And that goes for the DJs, that goes for the dancers, that goes for the artists, that goes to all the creatives that are on here, that's on here, about to be featured on here, and up and coming. Because I feel like I say, this podcast is built on, you know, putting the dancers and the DJs on a pedestal, because to me, I really want to uplift and encourage, you know, the dancers that I already know, the dancers that I met, and also the ones that are about to be and aspiring to be, in the dance scene. And I want them to be able to get acclimated with what's out there as much as possible through my lens or through my network. And also, so the dancers and the choreographers and DJs and so forth, those communities can support each other. Because there's a little bit of a disconnect, you know, with us as well. And especially in Boston, we don't really connect as much. We're starting to, and I love that, you know. And if I can do anything about, you know, putting us together, because we all we got, listen, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that because we, the DJs and the dancers, really have cultivated some careers, artist careers, a lot of careers in music, we have been the basis of what that looked like. You know what I mean? Because, you know, without the dancers, without the DJ, you wouldn't have a show. So I wanted to create a podcast specifically for us that talks about the things that we involve ourselves in, you know, basically everything around us, like that has to do with our dance community, because, you know, there's other podcasts out there that I've listened to that, that talk about dance, but it's more of like a company. So it's a specific genre, you know, most of the time it's either ballet or something else, and it's not really covering, you know, the other genres of dance, and and they're not covering it as a business either, because, you know, we should be compensated for our worth, and we should be elevated in a way that this is an art itself, period. You know what I mean? It's not merged in with anything. It's not slash, you know, injunction with. No, it's a separate platform. And, you know, when you are looking at a show, most of the time you're looking to see for the artist, but you also, the tone that's set is the DJ and the dancers, or the band and the dancers. So, and then the artist comes and does their thing. So, you know, with that being said, you know, as much as we are sort of like put on, you know, kind of like a we're an accessory. I don't, right. I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to change that narrative. And I also want to, you know, build up together and band up and come together and build more of a community, so that people can listen to each other's, you know, interviews. And if you didn't know something about one particular, you know, creative, you now know it, and you're like, you know, excited by it or inspired by it, you know, to do more. And, you know, and you may you never know, you gain people wanting to come to take class and learn from you, and vice versa, you know. So that's one of the reasons why I did this. Where can people find you on social media networks?
Yes. Back on social media. I took a hiatus for a little bit. But on Instagram, you can find me at Kunle313. So K-U-N is Nancy L-E 313. Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com, and it's Kunle.Oladehin, Oladehin. And I'm pretty responsive if you direct message me on either one. Even if it's just questions about style, I have people just take my class, and, you know, very few people take me up on it, but people that do, like, they'll send me videos and ask for critiques, or they'll, you know, ask me a question, and I'm happy to answer, because the knowledge I got from this culture was given to me for free. And
I know, that's right.
The best justice I can do for my mentors is make sure that the information gets passed on, for
that's
sure.
That's right. Share it. I mean, yeah. Listen, we, you know, like I say, right now there's a lot of moments where people need to grow, and they need to know where they're growing from. You know what I mean? Like, you need to know where stuff comes from. Like, people that are listening to, and I can only speak on what I know of and experiences that I have. So, like, people don't even know that Calypso, these younger kids have no idea that Calypso ever existed. Because they don't know that, and I'm talking about from a Caribbean dance standpoint, because, you know, they're coming up where it's dance hall and soca. So, and I'm only utilizing that analogy, and that really goes in a, like, a broad, you know, context of dance, period, learning what hip hop is versus hip hop as a dance. What hip hop is, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a song. It's not a, particular dance. You know, it's, there's a culture to it first. That's the main layer. There's a culture. Yeah. And some people don't, you know, they just know they like what they see, and they think that's hip hop. You know what I mean? Versus
right.
Knowing exactly what hip hop is. And I think, if we're doing our jobs as explaining where these cultures came from, and, you know, what the Caribbean looks like. I mean, I had a debate, not a debate, but like someone sent me in my inbox, like, soca trap music. And I'm like, what is this?
Wow.
And I'm like, I listened to it because I was trying to understand what they were sending me. And it was like, you know, I don't even think she's from Trinidad. I think she's mm-hmm. she like visited Trinidad, like, you know what I mean? Or I don't think she's born mm-hmm. and raised in Trinidad, but the females, she's not, you know, she's not Trinidadian, and so she's venturing off into, she redid a Whitney Houston song over soca music, and then she's doing soca trap music, and I just, you know, it's misappropriation is one of those tough things, because, you know, you can't please everybody, but that's one of them things where you ain't gonna see me doing trappity rap soca music in my class. I don't think I would do it. Unless one of those soca artists, shout out to Dynamite, shout out to Moto and Stiffy and them, if they decided to do it, Nikki Pierre, all of them, if y'all decide to do it, but y'all linked up with one of the trap artists like Jeezy and whoever else, then maybe. But I was like, what is this misappropriation? He was like, man, it's a straight thief. I said, okay. And I just had to like stop the conversation right there. But I will say that it's great for everybody who's out here now to learn where the music comes from, the style of dance originated from, and really mm-hmm. dive deep into what you're learning so that when you are doing it, you can do it and pass the information along, you know, to someone who may not know or is, you know, interested in knowing.
Yeah, for sure. It also makes you a better dancer. The best students that I've met are also the best dancers, and I don't think that's a circumstance. I think that's a result of people not just learning the steps, but learning the meaning behind them, mm-hmm. because then it gives the steps value that you can't, I can't say, but when you see someone and you know they know, mm-hmm. it shows in the movement.
Right.
You know, there's a quality of when I see, especially people from like that old school era, that even if they haven't danced in a while, but they get down and like, oh, they were around when it started. I just know from the quality of their movement.
Oh yeah.
Because they have that connection to where the culture began. So if you lose that connection along the way, that becomes very, very superficial. Maybe, especially in popping, I see this all the time, pop can be very impressive and not very inspiring at the same time. Mm. Because you have to have that. It came from funk. It came from soul. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as people love dubstep music because they can hit the beat and everything, if you don't have that connection to where this culture began, your movement's going to be lacking. And so you won't also be able to pass that information on when you're teaching. But even just for yourself, you need to get connected to culture if you're not.
Exactly. Now, what's your nickname? Like, what's your dance name? Because I heard you say Catalyst. And I'm like, hold up. Because, you know, I know you as Kunle, the dad, Dance Central, hubby, and the Harvard, you know, alumni. Like, Catalyst was your name?
Yeah, Catalyst is my popping name. That's what, it's funny, but I know I'm in a setting where I have both maybe friends that come to watch a battle, and then people from the community that know me, and they know me as Catalyst first. Mm. Because that's what I always entered as. And that was from, that was from early Slaughterhouse days.
Yeah, because I remember hearing the name all the time, but I didn't know that that was you. Yeah, see, and I'd have known Kool-Aid for however long, man. Look how come I didn't know that. I was wondering why your email said Catalyst. Didn't your email say Catalyst before?
It might have been. Yeah. So it was my alter ego, I guess. But, you know, the name stuck. And, you know, especially after, you know, Shallow Megatron started calling me that, and my friends started calling me that when I entered. And it's funny. I see it now as a call to be someone who can create change. And at first, I just thought, like, it just was because I had that scientific background and I picked up on moves quickly. And so it just stuck that way. But now I see it in a different light as I get older. And how do I create the change that I want to see in the world?
That's like, shout out to Lady Ice Official. She made a quote on her interview on the podcast here. She said that you become your name.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That you eventually start to come into your name and you become your name. Like, you know, you own it. That's, you know? Deep. And I was like, yo. Because I'm like, wait. Because when I think of Miss 5678, it's like, yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't have agreed to that.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like,
years ago,
we know who we are.
Yeah.
We find that name, or we're given that name because someone else sees who we are. You know, maybe that we don't even see ourselves. So that's, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute, she's saying spitting some gems here, but it's so true. being the change you want to see. That's a dope name to carry, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, being a game changer. Are you doing what you love?
Yes, now I am.
Yes.
we hadn't caught up in a minute. So, so again, I had this medical background. I went back to graduate school, was working at Columbia Medical Center in pulmonary medicine through 2016. And again, full circle. So Jed, who was part of like the initial group of Slaughterhouse and has since become one of my best friends. He got married to another dancer, Kelly. And Kelly, all of a sudden, out of the blue, calls me and she says, hey, I'm working for this organization. She's kind of the first official staff person because it started out as a volunteer organization. And she's like, hey, we're using dance as a way to reach kids and serve kids that are living in poverty.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, I need to hear more about this.
Right.
it came to me that she was also a dancer, very successful, toured, did all these things, and didn't really feel complete or felt like she was reaching her calling. So she had searched on Craigslist one day, found this organization, Everybody Dance Now, and applied for the program director position. Mm-hmm. After that, kind of revamping the program, had asked her husband one day, like, hey, who should I reach out to? And he's like, just give Kumei a call, see what he's up to. So after keeping in touch with her and hearing more about the organization, I was like, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. You know, that same
there,
feeling.
There goes again. There goes again.
Like, I'm supposed to be doing that. How did I know about this? So I made the leap in 2016 out of medicine into running this organization. At the time, we were serving in Southern California, like Santa Barbara, Ventura County, and Chicago. I helped start the New York program, again, working with dancers from the community, working in after-school settings and community centers, correctional facilities and juvenile detention centers, bringing dance as a way to, again, uplift and inspire people.
Amen.
And now, God, it's been coming up on 3 years with leading the organization. And now we're in 9 chapters across the U.S. Just opened 4 in the last year. So now we're in Portland, L.A., Inland Empire, Houston. We'll be in Boston, actually, in the fall with Sean and Jane over there in Boston. So not too far from you. So I'm going to be hitting you up.
So you'll be with Sean Burke?
Yes. Yeah, he's helping us make connections to schools there and doing some research. So that we can start, you know, classes hopefully in the fall.
So wait,
we'll be starting to recruit dancers and things like that.
Maybe you can also connect with Greater Boston Cares and the Cares Foundation in New York too, because it's a mentoring program for kids.
Oh, awesome! That'd be great.
So
yeah, so now in the sense I do, I get to lead a team of my friends, really, people from the community.
That's amazing.
And helping them build this for their cities and for their local communities. So it's challenging work for sure.
But you know what?
He
qualifies the calls. The called, mm-hmm. You know, God will call if he called you and he qualified you. You better go ahead and do it now.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Because I was like, I couldn't have planned this out at all. You know. Just everything that happened to get me ready for this point of stepping into this role and you're saying heeding the calling and feeling like I have the skills now to do it in a way that's effective.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have a brother?
Yes, I do.
Did you
a brother and then 2 sisters.
Wait, are they in Boston?
My brother was in Boston through a year and a half ago, and then actually he moved. Now he's like a 12-minute walk from us.
Because I know that one of my, I think one of my dancer friends, like when we used to like work together every day, choreograph together and like work with one of the artists out here, Ashley Giorgenti.
Oh.
Yeah, shout out to Ashley and her sister. Yeah.
So my brother also got into dancing in college. Was b-boying at first, and then as he got older, and we lived together more out of college in Boston. He got into salsa, and so he met Ashley.
Oh my God! Yes, I knew I seen her picture, and I'm like, wait a minute, is that Kool-Aid? That's Kool-Aid at the wedding. Hold on.
Yeah. And now they are married.
That's amazing. So she left. I knew she must have been gone because she used to live around the corner from my house, and I didn't hear a peep out of her.
Yeah.
Her or her sister.
Yeah. So.
That's amazing, man.
Small world.
It is. And she's an incredible dancer, you know? So.
Yeah, now she's studying. So the reason they moved actually closer to New York and, you know, thing for us that they can be around their nephew now, is because she's finishing her MFA program at NYU. So
wow.
She'll be going. Yeah, so studying dance education and doing teaching and yeah, so.
And she's excellent.
Still keeping up the dancing.
She's excellent. Yeah. We're literally the same height.
Yeah.
I only met like one or two people that were my height. She was my height. Exactly. We did a show with Jordan Knight and he was like, both y'all have to wear heels because this ain't gonna, y'all are two shorties. Y'all are very short.
Oh man.
And I'm like,
yes.
And then me and her, she loved wearing heels. I'm like, man, I would rather wear my little sneakers, but all right, I'll wear some heels. We went through the trenches together. We and her, she really was the person who saw my vision in working with artists and building mm-hmm. them up from ground up. The whole development part of it, the whole creative direction in it, like when they're a new artist or an artist that are on the come up, I appreciated her for really seeing my vision and sticking by me to support me in that, you know. But she really is an excellent dancer. I should have known she's part of your whole network and village, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And yeah, that's so funny.
How is fatherhood?
Oh man. What can you say? it's unlike anything else I've experienced, and in the best of ways. And it gives, I guess, parenthood in general, it gives you a new perspective on life that nothing else does.
Yeah.
Things that you think are important are no longer as important as you thought they are.
I agree.
And time with family is never as valuable as it is now. So it's... Yeah, it's hard. I had friends who, you know, had kids and have tried to explain to me both the good and bad, but you can never really prepare yourself for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's an indescribable love that you can't really, unless a person has their own experience, that you can't really, they don't understand it until they experience it.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? It's,
yeah.
It's tough. Like, you know, I don't think I've ever loved anything, you know, the way that I love my daughter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this, you'll agree with that when it comes to your son, like, you know, just to see him, to create him and to see him be a part of you and your wife and how each day is valuable. He changes each day. Like, I'm looking at pictures of Amiya last year and she still is like little. And then right now, she's like a little taller than me. And I'm like, girl, this was only a year ago. I can't believe it, you know?
Yes, it's true. It's very, very true. But yeah, they will give you perspective on time. I think especially in these early stages of like how small he was and now he's crawling. Like,
mm-hmm.
When did this happen?
Right.
Where's time going? but yeah, they also teaches me so much about everything. You know, he's, you know, it's not forming words yet. He's teaching me through how he's engaging with the world and, you know, how he's completely in the moment with everything. And, you know, just has an appreciation for things I take for granted.
Yeah.
You know, everything's new to him and you have to experience it and feel it and touch it and, you know, try and analyze it as best you can. And I want to develop some of that looking at world in kind of a new lens each day.
You know, the fun part about parenting is that all the things that you used to love to do as a kid, you can live vicariously through them because they don't know any difference. They'll be like, yeah, Mom, you can come dress up with me for Halloween.
Right.
Until it ain't cool no more. And they're like, no, hell no, you can't dress up with me. I'm going to a party. Nah. Last year this year I was a unicorn, man. Listen.
Oh, nice.
So... And she was like still cool with it. She's like, what's up? That's so cool. Like, you know, but I think mm-hmm. I got like maybe one or two more years with her with that. And she's going to be like, nah,
not cool. No
just
more.
Get dressed regular clothes and come with, but don't mm-hmm. be in no makeup and no, none of that. Like, I don't know if she's going to let me do it anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, come on, let's go do this. She's like, okay. Like, but you can see before it'd be like, come on. She suggests stuff to do, right? Now when mm-hmm. I suggest stuff, she's kind of like, but why? Like kind of hesitant. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, before you used to suggest it. Now it's like, And I just know that, you know, she's getting in those years of like the teen, tween age where... Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, I'm gonna say no to that.
right. You're not gonna embarrass me.
Right. Cool right. But she knows that, you know, any chance I get to dance, she doesn't even like when I dance outside of my classes. So mm-hmm. if there's music on and I start dancing, she's like, she tries to give me a hug, hold my hands, my arms. She's like standing in front of me, like, don't do it. She be so embarrassed, and I be cracking up. Like,
yeah, I'm ready. No worries. I'm practicing ways to embarrass my son.
Oh man, so. She already knows. I'll come to that school and turn it out. Like, I don't even have to. Like, I mean, of course you have to discipline your kids and like bark at them here and there. Like, I have to. I'm like yelling at her or having to like correct her is so far in between these days because she's understanding it. She gets it. She understands consequences. Like, she her own consequences. Like, if she's late to catch her bus and she doesn't like it, it's and she knows, okay, the consequences, now I have to go into a full sprint early in the morning to catch this bus and almost kind of look like a crazy person by if I don't catch it. Two, I'm out of breath and I don't like that feeling. So I'm gonna get ready in a timely fashion and walk to the bus stop in enough time to stand there and just wait for my bus, and that way I don't play myself. You know what I mean?
Right.
But now but she knows I'll bring a cardboard, a boombox from like 1984, and dress up with the headband, the sweatband, the sweatsuit, everything, with tube socks and everything, come to her school and turn it out if she acts up. She don't like none of that stuff. I'm like, Amiya.
Hey, no, that's the worst punishment for them, being embarrassed in front of their friends.
What? Like, my mother, I think we skipped school one time, and, I don't think. We skipped school one time. Let me just admit it, okay? And this is so funny because everybody who knows her on E! Entertainment, Maria Menounos, she used to work in the office. And that day I'm thinking, oh, she's working in the office, at, you know, because she was like the submaster's assistant. And I'm thinking she's in the office and that, you know, if, like, hey, we're going to call to, you know, call to, hey, say we're absent. But in that day, we never called and said nothing because we thought we had a snow day. And they were like, nah, you don't have a snow day, so you have to be at school. So we left like we were going to school, and then we skipped school. So when I think they called the house looking for us. And I'm thinking, oh, they're not going to call to check. They called. And then my mother and my grandmother were looking everywhere, like calling around and stuff. And then they finally were like, well, let's call my aunt's boyfriend's house because that's where we were. We had ordered pay-per-view, some Chinese food, and was like chilling. And then my sister answered the phone. OMG.
No.
Why did you do that, right? So she answered the phone. My grandmother comes over there, and my mother comes over there, picks us up. Tell me why my mother has a zoot suit on. High-tech boots and one of them old velvet Snoop Dogg hats from like the 70s. Yo. And she was like, you know, she said some expletives, you know, if, in a Caribbean way, get you know what in your, in the car. And she wanted to take us back to school. Yo, when she stepped foot in the school and people seen what she had on and we were, I'll never do it again. I never skipped school after that day ever again. Ever again. Because I was like, I don't want my mother to come up to the school just like that. Hell no. Right. And all my friends were like, yo, what she got on? So, I mean, I tell that to Amia, like, Amia, I will put on, like, the most outlandish outfit and come to the school and turn it out. So you better not. So she just doesn't. She already knows.
That's a fear in them, no doubt.
Right, man. So, I mean, when you talk about practicing, like, your son might think, like, my dad coming to school with a cardboard box to dance on and a boombox is cool because he does this. Like, you know what I mean? But Mamiya, she's like, nah, man, don't even think about it. I mean, I think you're going to, are you looking to do, stay stationary in New York?
Yeah, so, I mean, now with work, I do travel. I haven't traveled for work since the baby, but now I'm kind of getting back into the cycle. So I usually go out to the West Coast to visit, again, our leaders and our teachers there. I'll be going to Chicago. But for the most part, I try and be present at home and maybe just shoot out for like a day or two every month or every other month. But yeah, we'll be in New York for the indefinite future. Never thought I'd call this place home, but it's been a decade now and no plans on moving anywhere else in the States. So it's home for now.
That's amazing. Well, last question of the day is, what's your message?
Oh, man.
I know. The questions I asked her, like, everybody says the same thing, like, oh, man.
Right. I'm trying to think of, I have one message. I think the message is listen to what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
Find other people that agree. And I think that's why I've stayed in the culture so long, is that at first it was like, cool, like this is, you know, I can win money in battles, or I can show up for my friends who don't dance. Like, look, I can do this and this. But that never keeps people in it. You know, it's when I see people who I thought were amazing dancers drop in and out of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh man, it was just about dance for them. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's my tribe.
Yeah.
You know, this culture is my tribe. I found something that I love, and I found other people that love it as much as I do.
Yep.
Why would I ever leave?
Right, exactly.
Even if I couldn't dance, I just love the mindset of the people who love this thing.
And being around it.
Yeah.
You know?
So that would be, it doesn't have to be dance. Just find something that fills your heart and find those other people who are in alignment with you, and you'll be so much happier.
Oh, man.
So that's my message.
I agree. And I love that message because it's so true, man. It is so true. Well, Kunle, a.k.a. Catalyst, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Dope dancer. I'm so honored to have been able to sit on this podcast and sort of get your perspective on career, life, and what you love to do, and get, you know, some great insight and wisdom on what your take is and what your experience has been. And I wish you, you know, ultimate success and ultimate prosperity. And I wish you, you know, an incredible experience beyond the experience you've already had as a parent, as a dad, as a leader. And I hope that we cross paths on, you know, any type of fulfillment projects that you have going on that has to do with building people and building community. And I would definitely stay in contact with you for your foundation, and try to link up with the Greater Boston Cares Foundation too. And also just help with whatever whatever you're doing. I would love to, you know more about it and try to get involved as much as possible. Because I definitely want to reach back to, you know, our community and people who are aspiring and looking, you know, looking to do more. I want to be a part of helping, you know, so. And yeah, I'm thankful. Thank you. I'm thankful that we have you in our dance community still, and that you are a staple in it, and you're, you know, key importance to it, you know. So thank you for being a part of the dance community, man.
Yeah, thank you. And then thank you for being part of my dance journey and part of my dance family. And, you know, if nothing else, dance has let me cross paths with amazing people such as yourself and inspiring people. And so I thank you for doing what you're doing. And
yes, thank you.
Taking that initiative to connect us and share our stories throughout the dance community.
So yes.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Kunle, you rock, man.